Welcome to the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast. I am Lindsay Lockett, your host. The episodes of this podcast weave together a web of healing. The conversations shared here are created with love and the belief that awareness, curiosity, authenticity, and vulnerability are our most necessary and powerful healing tools, and they are already within each one of us. The spider's web has served as a great teacher for me. Webs are designed in such a way that the tiniest vibration in one part of the web ripples out and vibrates the entire web. Through this intricate network, every thread is connected. Nothing happens to one that doesn't somehow affect the others. Each human is a strand in the collective web, and inside of you exists the threads of body, mind, spirit, emotion, ancestry, and community that make up your web of life. It is not unlike the web of neurons in our brains or the web of the nervous system that connects each system and part of our bodies together. Everything is connected. I hope this podcast helps you get to the root of how trauma has affected every part of your existence and helps you weave a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past. Hello and welcome back to the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast. I am here with a very, very special guest. Today, I am joined by my daughter, Addie, who is 18 and a half, almost 19. And Addie, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself before we jump in today?
Hi, my name's Addie. I'm like really into music and I like drawing, just here to have a good time with my mom.
Nice. Yeah, Addie has a really impressive record collection that includes the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Green Day,
Queen.
Yeah, it's your favorite. So we get a lot of good music in our house, thanks to Addie's room.
Yes.
So anyway, the reason why we wanted to come on and have this conversation together is to share about a really important and intimate conversation that we had a couple days ago. And Addie, why don't you just share with our listeners like what you shared with me and what you were feeling?
So basically, I've just been kind of struggling with food a little bit, like my relationship with food. And I was just telling her that, like, I don't want to eat anything other than like sweets and junk food and stuff like that. And I have like a very strange relationship with eating like healthy, I guess you could say.
Yeah, air quotes.
Yeah. And I tend to feel like a lot of guilt whenever I eat sugar, but for some reason that's like all I ever feel like eating.
Mm-hmm. And what were you hoping to accomplish or get out of sharing that with me?
I want to have a better relationship with food. Like, I don't want to feel guilt every time I eat anymore. And I would rather be able to nourish myself with whatever foods I feel like eating.
Yeah. And you understand the difference between foods that, like, objectively are supportive or not supportive of the body.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, Addie came to me and told me a version of this the other day, and what I immediately felt was a little bit of shame. Honestly, it wasn't a lot of shame, because I think deep down I always knew that this time would come, and here's why. So the backstory is that around 2008, my husband and I began to question like mainstream medical things, and this was following our son having a really incredibly bad reaction to a flu vaccine when he was 3. And this podcast is not an anti-vax podcast. I'm just sharing what happened in our family. So he had a really bad reaction to a flu shot when he was 3 years old. And around that time, we started seeing a chiropractor who was very focused on whole body holistic wellness. And so this chiropractor, like, one Saturday a month would offer like a workshop where she would talk about nourishing foods or
how chiropractic was beneficial to the body and the nervous system, or how to eat healthier, the dangers of vaccines, like things like that. And so our family began attending these workshops because we were really, really committed to the chiropractor and also to recognizing how we weren't prioritizing our health. And we were in our young 20s at this point. So like, I don't know many young 20-year-olds who are seriously prioritizing their health. But the difference with us with young kids, with being young 20-year-olds, was that we had young toddlers.
There you go.
Yeah. While we were young 20-year-olds. So it was like, we wanted to set our kids up to be healthier and learn how to eat healthy foods and stuff like that. So I think our hearts and minds were in the right place whenever we started it. But my own nervous system dysregulation definitely showed up in the way that our family began eating. And I began to become very perfectionistic about food. I began to be very obsessed with like food cleanliness and purity and sourcing. And I was demonizing sugar a lot. I was always telling my kids like how bad sugar was for them and how bad processed foods were for them. I was in a binary about food where food became good or bad, right or wrong, healthy or unhealthy. And so even though I wasn't intentionally trying to condition my kids to have disordered eating patterns, I think it's safe to say that at least for you, that's kind of exactly what happened.
I think so too. Yeah. I think that as a kid, like being raised that way, like I remember feeling bad if like I asked for like candy or something and like thinking, oh, she'll probably say no if I ask for this. And yeah, I still kind of feel that way sometimes. Like it just kind of brings back memories.
Yes. Isn't that interesting that you're 18? You have a job and you have your own money and you can buy
whatever I want.
Exactly. Yeah. But you still have this voice in your head that's like, no, you're bad. No, that's wrong. Or maybe not you're bad, but this is bad.
Yeah, I get like the, like, this is not good for you. Like, this will make your cavity worse. I have a cavity that I discovered like last year.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I discovered that cavity, like, my relationship with food definitely started to get worse. But, like, again, like, I felt like I couldn't eat anything other than sugar or, like, junk food or whatever. But every time I do eat it, I'm like, I'm making my cavity worse right now.
Okay. And so what does the cavity mean to you? And like, what do you think led up to you getting a cavity?
I mean, probably like whenever I was kind of rebelling, like in 2021, like whenever I started drinking Monsters a lot and eating a lot of Oreos and Mike and Ike's and other candy and stuff. That started in like 2021 and continued like through 2022. But then towards the end of 2022, I noticed the cavity and I just started being like, oh boy, this is what I'm doing to myself. I don't feel good about it.
Yeah. And so, like, just to be clear, like, I didn't put that on you. Like, well, this is what happens.
Right.
Eat a bunch of sugar. Like, right. You're going to get cavities. You just discovered that for yourself. And
yeah.
And you put two and two together because you do know a lot about food because of what I taught you. I just have to acknowledge that, like, I taught you about food in a really dysregulated way. So it's like, I don't believe at all that the information I was teaching our family about food was in any way bad or wrong. But I think the way I was going about it with perfectionism and, you know, binary thinking, hypervigilance about our bodies and our symptoms and trying to control and micromanage symptoms with food and healing diets and like all of that kind of stuff, like really, I mean, I can acknowledge that that really set you guys up for a disordered relationship with food. And so I think whenever you shared that with me, like initially I was like, okay, here we go. It's happening. I knew this day would come. And also I noticed that I felt some shame about that because now I have awareness that what I was teaching you and your brother about food and the ways that I was demonizing certain foods and making some foods off limits and creating binary thinking and perfectionism around food, like You know, of course that would set you guys up to have a really weird relationship with food as adults.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever you shared that with me, it felt really, really important for me to validate what you're experiencing, what, you know, the difficulty that you're feeling with the voice in your head, like shooting all over you and making you feel guilty. And I mean, is it fair to say like taking away like any pleasure that you would get from eating food?
It definitely does sometimes. Like if I'm eating like a candy bar or something that I really like, I will start feeling bad that I'm even eating it in the first place because of my weird relationship with it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So what I had to acknowledge in our conversation was, do you know why you have this voice in your head and this relationship with food? Like, do you know why? And I remember asking you that and you looked at me and you were like, no, I don't. And I said, I put this on you. The voice in your head that you're hearing about food is not your authentic voice. These are not your authentic feelings and beliefs about food. This was me conditioning and programming you and your brother around food. And the inner voice that you're hearing now isn't your voice. It sounds like my voice.
Yeah.
And it does sound like my voice, doesn't it?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. So, like, as a parent, I think it's important for me to own that I did that and let you know that I'm so sorry and let you know that if I had known better, I would have done better.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, I didn't know better. And a lot of parents don't know better. Like, a lot of parents, we just don't know what we don't know. And we end up totally unconsciously perpetuating these patterns in ourselves or in our families, or you know, putting our own dysregulation on our kids, and then our kids grow up and they kind of adopt it as their own.
Mm-hmm.
But it, I mean, I think you would say that it doesn't feel authentic for you.
No.
Yeah. And it wasn't authentic for me.
Right.
Right. Like, that's the thing, is like that type of disordered orthorexic, like, perfectionism about food has also had consequences in my body.
Yeah.
And I still, like, I feel like I'm still sort of like sorting out those consequences, like just dealing with some weight gain and perimenopausal hormone changes and like wanting to support myself but not wanting to go back into patterns of micromanaging my body or restriction and things like that. And so, like, I can wholeheartedly acknowledge that what I taught you about food probably wasn't harmful. Like, I think it's important for kids to understand how to support their bodies with foods that are nourishing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the ways in which I went about it are what was harmful.
Yeah.
I think the projection of perfectionism and hypervigilance and binary thinking and even morality around food, I think what was harmful for you. And like, I can acknowledge that and say that I'm really, really sorry that I did that. And I'm sorry that the voice in your head sounds like my voice. Like, that's, you know, my inner critic voice sounds a lot like my mom's voice.
Runs in the family.
Right. Well, that's generational trauma, right?
Yeah.
So like, anyway, what I want our listeners to hear is both of our perspectives, because I remember telling you also that a couple days ago on Instagram, I put out some polls.
Mm-hmm.
And the polls were asking people what generation they're in. So whether they're boomers, millennial, or Gen X, millennials, or Gen Z.
Mm-hmm.
And overwhelmingly, my audience is millennials and Gen X people.
Mm-hmm.
I think 1% of the poll was boomers. And then I ask, like, if you are Gen X or a millennial and you're on some sort of personal improvement, healing journey, trauma healing work, whatever, like, can you talk with your boomer parents about that? And like over 80% of people in the polls, and I mean, I had several hundred people answer from my audience. So like over 80% were like, either know I don't talk to my parents about my healing work, or I've tried talking to them about it, but they don't understand, or they get defensive.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say something like 88% of people said that their boomer parents get defensive whenever they, as millennials, try to bring up, like, you know, here's what I went through as a kid, and here's what I'm having to do to heal myself. And, like, I genuinely think that most millennials, like, we're not trying to make our boomer parents feel like shit parents. Like, I mean, I think, you know, probably a lot of boomer parents were shit parents. But I don't think that our intention with discussing our healing work with our parents is in an effort to make them feel bad or shame or wrong. But as a parent myself, I can understand how it's very, very difficult when your kid comes to you as an adult and is like, hey, I'm dealing with this thing, and I'm dealing with this thing because of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening in this situation with you.
Yeah.
You are dealing with this 100% because I put this on you.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of our boomer parents are having a really hard time acknowledging that. And so their instinct is to defend themselves, to gaslight their kids, deflect.
Shut down.
Right. Shut down. Yeah. Go shut down, become passive aggressive, give the silent treatment, and make sort of like passive aggressive, you know, comments like,
I am such a bad parent.
Yes, exactly. Sorry, I'm such a bad parent. I'm sorry, I was such a bad mom.
Sorry, you had such a difficult childhood.
Yeah. Or, you know, they like, well, I don't remember it that way. Like, things like that. And so
that would piss me off if you had said that to me.
And I think a lot of millennials are really pissed off at their boomer parents.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, it was just amazing to me in doing these polls to see that there really is a collective disconnect between millennials and our boomer parents.
Mm.
And I think it's really, really sad. I think that, you know, our boomer parents were raised by parents who came out of World War II. And like, World War II for both men and women was a very much like, pull yourselves up by your bootstraps, make it work for the country. We have to win this war no matter what.
Right.
And of course, PTSD was not understood at that time. So a lot of men came home from the war and they had really bad PTSD. You know, they called it shell shock back then, but it was PTSD. And so they resorted to, you know, alcohol and drugs and anger towards their kids. And like, really, a lot of our boomer parents or the World War II, what is that generation called? The greatest generation or the...
Something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either. Anyway, the generation before the boomers.
Yeah.
You know, like, they... their capacity to talk about emotions and really like have awareness about patterns that ran in families and conditioning, you know, the voice of their inner critic and all of that. Like, there wasn't even really language for that back in 1946, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's understandable why my boomer parents, like, don't have awareness about trauma and generational patterns and adaptive survival responses and the nervous system and all that, because their parents' generation didn't raise them to talk about emotions, right? They didn't raise them to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
They raised them to be tough. And I think to look at things on the surface level instead of digging deeper, like, you know, boomers, in my opinion, boomers tend to follow more of the, like, you know, the collective consciousness when it comes to, like, oh, the government's supporting us and, like, you know, things like that. Whereas, like, I feel like millennials, we're the first generation to really, like, collectively question authority and to really question societal norms and to use our critical thinking skills. And, you know, the boomer generation is very much into, like, well, if it's what my doctor says, it's what I'm going to do,
yeah.
You know, whereas millennials are more like, I'm actually going to go research this for myself, and I'm actually going to make an informed choice and not just do what you tell me to do. So the differences in our generations are huge. And And there is this disconnect, especially regarding having common language, I think, to talk about these things.
Yeah.
I'm not sure because, you know, I'm an older millennial, an elder millennial. I was born in 1983. So I'm an elder millennial, and I have, you know, older, I think you would be like an elder Gen Zer, right?
No, those were like born in the later 90s.
Okay. And you were like, born in 2005.
I'm like a Gen Z. I'm just Gen Z.
Okay. Yeah, well, David and I do, you know, we're just in our early 40s and our kids are 20 and 18. So like we started having kids really young. So we're still relatively young parents, but we have adult children who are Gen Z. And so, you know, at least the atmosphere of our family for like the last 5 years or so has been to openly talk about our feelings and to work on healthy communication, to be vulnerable with one another, to be authentic and not be in like people pleasing or fawning, or, you know, we do talk openly about like, what does the voice in your head say about this, to bring awareness to things like that. And I'm really grateful that we have that language as a family. But also like, I, as the parent, have to be willing, like, if I'm going to have a healed, whole, open relationship with my kids, I have to do it differently than my boomer parents did, you know? And so, like, I think all millennials right now are, like, trying to figure out, how do I do this differently than my boomer parents? How do I not perpetuate some of these patterns and cycles of trauma and addiction and emotional abandonment and things like that onto our kids? And, you know, it's really hard because honestly, like, I feel like the millennial generation is the ones that are really figuring this out.
Yeah.
And kind of by like trial and error, you know? I'm curious, like, you're friends with Gen Z people, your peers are Gen Z. So like, are your friends and their families like talking about emotions and regulation and not perpetuating trauma and being aware of the voice in your head? Or are we just like the weird family?
We're more like the weird family.
Of course.
Yeah. Most of my friends, I think, don't really do that. They're more of like the keep our emotions hidden, like down, bury them, model them up, and agree with that.
Yeah, why don't you agree with that?
Because when you do that, it like, at some point, it'll all like come bursting out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, do you think that your friends would be like open to talking more vulnerably about their emotions and feelings, or do you think that that's something that they're just going to have to learn later as they grow up?
I'm not really sure. I think they would, like, maybe be, like, sort of open to it at some point, but I don't really know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anything else that you want to share? Like, I think what I remember the most about our conversation when we were talking about this like disordered eating and this voice in your head, I think what I remember the most about this conversation was that whenever I told you, like, do you know where this comes from? Yeah. And you were like, no. And I was like, it comes from me. Mm-hmm. I put this on you. Like, this is my disordered patterning around food that I have perpetuated onto you totally unconsciously. Like, yeah. I didn't do it on purpose, but I still did it. And I apologize to you for that. And like, I just, to me, my perception of your facial expression was that, like, relief washed over your face. Is that your perspective of what you...
I think so. I definitely did feel a sense of relief after just, like, telling you what's been going on in my head.
And what about that felt relieving for you?
I don't know. I've just been kind of, like, holding that back because I've been trying to think, like, maybe I don't have, like, a disordered eating pattern or, like, relationship with food. Or, like, I don't know, maybe it's something I can get over myself or, like, figure it out myself. But then I don't really remember how I ended up telling
I don't either.
But it just kind of came up, and then, I don't know, it just felt good to finally get it out.
Yeah. And now that you got it out, we've talked about it, like, do you feel like you can handle it on your own, or do you feel like you want some support?
Support would be nice.
Okay. So I told my Instagram audience, I did some stories yesterday and talked about this and let them know that we were going to be recording this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I got a question from someone who seemed kind of concerned. Actually, two questions. So her first question was like, did you make sure to tell your daughter that she can eat sugar without any kind of caveat, or like there doesn't have to be any kind of, you know, voice in the head about sugar and whatever else? Like, did you tell her that?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that I said that exactly, like, oh, you should just eat sugar whenever and never feel bad about it. Like,
you were more like, you should just know that you don't have to feel guilt about it. Like, you should be able to have, like, you, like, if you can eat whatever you want and not have to feel guilty about it and not have to feel shame or anything like that.
Yeah. But did you take that as like, oh, then I can just eat however much fucking sugar I want. It doesn't matter.
No.
How did you take that?
I took that as like, I can eat whatever I want, but at the same time, that doesn't mean I should, or like, it would still be better to like help nourish yourself
then. Well, because you're also experiencing the natural consequence of a cavity.
Right. And I don't really know. I think that I still want to try like eating, I guess, I don't really want to say healthier foods, but I guess better foods.
More nourishing foods.
Yeah, there you go. But I definitely do know that every once in a while, I would like to have a little sweet treat.
Of course, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. I mean, we're both drinking, like, Dandelion with sugar in it. Like, we've got organic sugar in our drink right now.
Yep.
So we're definitely not anymore and like, a totally anti-sugar household.
Right. Yeah,
like,
we eat sugar.
Yeah, we've definitely loosened things up a lot, but that still doesn't mean that that voice in your head isn't there, because that voice in your head was programmed from a really, really young age for you,
mm-hmm.
right? Before you understood like nuance and complexity and eating in moderation and like what's supportive and not supportive for your body and all of that. Like, this voice and this programming was created in you long before any of that.
Yeah.
The other question that this person asked was, are you going to get her outside help so that she doesn't have to talk to a parent about her deepest feelings?
Why is that for you? Because I don't need outside help.
Okay. But if you wanted outside help, do you know that we would get it for you?
Yes, I do know that. But I don't think I really need it. I think all I really need is like the support from my friends and family to help me get through this, whatever I'm going through.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I need to go to like a therapist, or I mean, maybe one day, but like at this moment, I don't feel the need to like go through a therapist or like something else and what else. But
yeah,
I think right as of right now, all I really need is just support from people I've hold closest to me.
Yeah. And do you feel like emotionally safe talking about this particular topic, like with me?
Yes.
Yeah. So even though I'm the one who put the program in place, like, you still feel that I'm a safe person to help you navigate your way out of this program. Why is that?
Because you've done a lot of work on yourself, and I think that, like, maybe 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have felt safe to tell you that. Through this 10 years ago.
Well, no, that's when I
You were.
I was throwing it at you then.
Right. But, no, I think that this is something I definitely safe.
Yeah. And, I mean, do you feel like you have an eating disorder?
Maybe like a tiny one, either that or just like on the brink of one.
Yeah.
But like, it's definitely been something I've been thinking of my mind for a while.
Yeah. And does it feel freeing to have shared it with someone and to be like, I don't have to hold all of this in and figure it out on my own anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It does. And I mean, it's just been 2 days since we've had that conversation. Have you noticed anything different in your relationship with food or the voice in your head or in your body since we had that conversation?
I think the voice in my head has kind of like quieted down a little bit, but I don't know. I still like don't really feel hungry or like I don't really want to eat anything still. But I think this is definitely just gonna be something that takes some time.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because you were kind of, I don't think you were restricting what you were eating on purpose.
No. Mm-mm.
Well, yeah, what's going on with you eating?
It was like
less.
It's not anything to do with like my weight or anything. I'm not purposefully restricting myself. I don't really feel like super hungry anymore. And like, I don't really like eating breakfast anymore because it just feels weird and I never know what I want to eat for breakfast. And I don't really know. I just don't ever feel like eating. It's not to do with my weight. I'm not like anorexic or anything.
No, you're not.
But I don't know. I just don't feel hunger that much. And it's really weird because I know I probably should it.
I mean, yeah, I think like, it's interesting that you're naming it as like, I don't feel this particular sensation of hunger. And of course, the coach in me wants to be like, you know, is it possible that you've numbed yourself or dissociated from the sensation of hunger because of all the judgment and guilt that you have going on in your mind about food? Like, is it possible that, like, if you don't eat, then you don't have to deal with the voice in your head making you feel like shit about it?
That kind of resonates a little bit.
Okay.
It's like, so like I said, all I really want is, like, junk food. And I don't know what to eat when it comes to eating better. And so I'm like, well, I don't really want to eat this food, but I also know that I shouldn't eat this food.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I just won't eat anything at all, but I don't actually think that. I guess it just kind of,
yeah,
those are the words I can put it into.
Yeah, and another thing that makes it challenging is, you can tell our listeners what it's like living in an ingredients household.
We live in an ingredient household. We don't really have, like, easy snacks to grab or like anything like that. I mean, we have like a couple snacks. I've got like those chocolate peanut butter cups, not ones or whatever, but like most people have like Cheez-Its and Pop-Tarts and like all kinds of easy to grab snacks off the shelf. And then I'm in my house and I'm like standing at the pantry with the blinds open and just contemplating what I could eat.
Yeah, because you would have to take those ingredients and
bake something.
Yeah. So
I want to make something.
I know. Same.
That's why the ramen is the
same. Yeah. But, you know, also, part of adulting is, like, understanding that your food can't always come out of a package or a box or a bag. Like,
convenience foods aren't, like, what you should live off of.
Exactly. Yeah. And are you saying that from a, like, guilty shoulding kind of place? Or are you saying that from a, like, I know that that's not a realistic way to live the rest of my life?
Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to do a better job of trying to keep some snacks around that are easy for you to grab.
Mm-hmm.
And
I won't feel guilty about eating.
Right. But I'd love to see you get to the place where no matter what you're eating, you don't feel guilty.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what I miss about like 2021, 2022 is that I never felt guilty about drinking all my Monsters or eating all my Oreos.
Yeah.
And that's what I miss.
Yeah, and we talked about that too the other night, where I said that I think that you going through that phase in 2021, 2022 of just, you know, Monsters and Oreos and bags of chips and candies and all of that, like, I think that was, you needed to rebel.
Yeah.
In that way, you know, like, that honestly was your, like, teenage rebellion.
At least it wasn't sex, drugs, and alcohol.
Right. So
at least it was only Oreos.
Right. So you went on a little bit of a, like, a year-long, like, junk food bender.
Yeah. That's definitely true.
Okay. And the natural consequence of that is that you got a cavity.
Yep.
And that...
Once the cavity appeared, then I started feeling guilty about what I ate because that was the result of the cavity.
Okay, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting that it took a cavity for you to... And I wonder, I mean, this is just speculation here, but you got the cavity as a natural consequence of just eating a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And, like... That was the wake-up call, I guess, for, like, oh, like, maybe this isn't very good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But you only had that voice of guilt because there was a natural consequence.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So, like, what do you think that's all about?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I just, like, I don't know. Maybe I thought that, like, I would be lucky enough to not get a cavity or something. I don't really know. But, like, once I saw the cavity there, I started being like, oh, man, I need to cut back on some stuff. And then I actually did for a while. And then I don't know what happened, but I like to use the term I relapsed. And then I noticed, like, back in November, my cavity started to get a little worse.
Well, it was getting better for a while.
It was, and that's because, like, I was trying to, like, be better at regulating my junk food intake. And then, again, I, quote-unquote, relapsed. And, like, I still don't eat as much junk food as I did back then. But, like, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, food is definitely weird. The stories and the emotions that we have around food are really, really weird, for sure. So, yeah, what are you wanting to focus on going forward?
Well, my New Year's resolution for this year is to heal my cavity by the end of the year. So we've got that going.
Okay.
And I think ever since our talk a couple nights ago, like, that kind of helped me get, like, a real kickstarter, like, actually trying to heal my cavity this time.
Okay.
Like, not only just healing my cavity, but, like, just not healing my relationship with food.
Absolutely.
In general.
And I'm going to support you in both. And I want to say this, now that we're just at the beginning of the year still, in March, and your goal is to heal your cavity.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't heal your cavity by the end of the year, you can still have a better relationship with food.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you failed. For sure. I can imagine that we have some listeners who are raising their eyebrows about healing the cavity.
Okay, so it's the context on that. last school year, she gave me a couple books to read on natural cavity healing, basically. Or, like,
because you had expressed interest.
Right.
I wasn't like, here, you have
right. No, she, without going to the dentist, and it's just all, like, eating really good foods and, like, good butter, good milk, grass-fed stuff, like, all that good shit.
Just nutrient-dense.
Right. And I've read... I know I got through one whole book, and then the other book you gave me was just telling me, like, the same thing as that first book did. So it's like, yeah, I get it. And so after reading those books, I learned that you can heal a cavity without going to the dentist and getting it filled. So that is my goal, is to try to heal my cavity without going to the dentist.
Yeah. And I think it's really cool, like, you know, everything that we put in our bodies is either, you know, unobjectively, it's either supportive or not supportive of our bodies, right? Like, there's no good and bad. There's no morality attached to food. Sometimes we need to prioritize physical nourishment, and sometimes we prioritize emotional nourishment. And when we prioritize emotional nourishment, sometimes that looks like, I'm going to eat the candy bar, or I'm going to, you know, drink the
monster
or whatever. Like
if 59 cent ramen,
right? If that feels emotionally nourishing to you, for me personally, 59 cent ramen does not feel emotionally nourishing for me. But
I stood in gut work the other day and stood at the ramen aisle for like 5 minutes trying to decide if I really wanted the 59 cent one or if I wanted to do the slightly healthier, like $3 ramen.
Okay.
And then I ended up doing a heads or tails with Siri and I got the healthier ramen anyway.
Delicious. Nice. Yeah, I don't remember what I was going to ask you. I feel like that was going somewhere and then I totally, it's okay. It doesn't matter. Yeah, like, I think it's interesting too. And, you know, maybe if we could dig in a little bit deeper around like ways that you were punished as a child for like misbehaving, if that is what the cavity represents to you. And so that's why you're so like resistant towards, or why you started having so much guilt whenever you discovered the cavity, is because it felt like a punishment, maybe? Did it feel like a punishment? Like,
really? No.
No? Okay.
I don't think it's not punishment, but like,
okay.
Just close it.
Okay. Yeah.
Well,
I think, you know, that when you focus more on foods that are nourishing to your body, and, you know, things like raw milk and good butter and grass-fed meats and vegetables and, you know, things like that, like you've already experienced your cavity getting better when you focus on those things. Mm-hmm. So like, did that make you want to focus on those things more? Because it was like, oh, I'm actually making some progress on this. This feels good.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then you kind of fell off again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really remember how I fell off the air, but I did.
Well, it was probably this this voice in your head thing, right? Like,
maybe.
Does it create anxiety around food? Is there anxiety or is it just mostly guilt?
I think mostly guilt. Like, the other day, whenever my friends and I went on that big road trip, I have bought myself like a few candies or whatever. And then I like kind of congratulated myself on not eating a whole lot of junk food that day.
Were you purposely trying not to eat a whole lot of junk food? Or like, okay.
I mean, I'm like always trying not to eat a lot of junk food and I end up will.
When you are trying not to eat a lot of junk food, is your motivation coming from guilt?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that a lot of people actually get a lot of motivation from guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you're open to the possibility of like not letting guilt be a motivator for you. Yeah, well, you just have to have a boundary with yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Like when you notice that guilt is there and you are in awareness that the guilt is trying to motivate you, is like, you know, thought stopping that inner critic voice and being like, I'm going to trust my body to lead me to what my body desires versus what this voice in my head is telling me I should or shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you're a really intuitive person.
Yeah.
So I trust that you actually can like listen to your body,
mm-hmm,
over the critical voice in your head when it comes to like intuitively knowing what your body wants.
Yeah, it's just that the voice in the head is a lot louder.
Well, yeah. The voice of fear is always louder than the still soft voice of intuition, right? And so that requires like, you know, what I tell my clients to do is like, okay, I'm aware that there's this voice of guilt in my head and here's what this voice is saying, right? It's just like grounding yourself in the present moment, making the unseen seen, as it were, and, you know, then dropping into your body, like, what do I feel in my body right now? I think that's a skill that you can practice more, is not just trying to bypass the voice in your head by like another voice in your head trying to motivate you, mm-hmm, but actually like noticing what the voice in your head says and then going into your body and being like, okay, where do I feel this guilt in my body? Where do I feel this fear around food or whatever the emotion is that you would call it, like, where do I feel that in my body? And really being like, oh, it's like here, it's a pit in my stomach, or it's a knot in my throat, or I get really tense in the back of my neck. Like, do you notice any kind of feeling in your body, or is it just the voice in your head that you're aware of at this point?
I mean, I think I would have to like actually go through it to like remember how I feel. But I think like sometimes like my heart feels like weird, almost kind of like whenever it starts racing when I have anxiety, but I know it's not anxiety. And then like, I don't know. I think it's just mostly the guilt, but like sometimes it'll be like a weird, like almost anxiety feeling.
Yeah.
But it's not quite anxiety.
Yeah.
That's all I can really remember in this moment.
Okay. Well, we can make a point to try to bring awareness to those moments when you notice that guilt voice in your head. And if I happen to be there, I can encourage you to drop into your body and see what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else that you want to say or share?
I'm going to make it to this year with the old cavity.
Fuck yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, you are.
I don't know. That's the first thing that came in my head.
Yeah, great. Okay, so the whole reason I was able to hear my daughter share that she was having this relationship with food, this battle in her mind about what's healthy and unhealthy, and sort of putting her in this like freeze response around food, being motivated by guilt, you know, like all of that, and then telling me about that and me being able to take responsibility for my part in that and offer my support to help her repattern that is because I'm able to feel without fear. And I think that this is, again, it speaks to the disconnect between millennials and our parents. When our parents are confronted with the reality of our childhood experience, when we try to share with them what our experiences were and how they impacted us and what we're doing now to overcome some of those things and change things for our kids going forward, our boomer parents are not able to feel that shame without fear. So as soon as we reflect back to them what our childhood experiences were, it immediately brings up shame for them, you know, guilt, regret, wishing that they had done it differently, maybe anger that we're even bringing it up, like whatever it is. But I think the root of it is shame. And it's that they feel shame that their kids didn't turn out perfectly, or that, you know, their millennial kids grew up and we have problems that maybe they didn't expect us to have. And, you know, their attitude is like, well, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and figure it out, you know, whereas we millennials now are like, this isn't working, right? It didn't work for you. And that's why I have a lot of the trauma that I have. And so I don't want to put that on my kids. And so I think if our boomer parents were able to hear what we're sharing with them whenever we talk about our experiences and notice that they feel shame, but the shame isn't being put on them, right? Like, we as their kids are not shaming our parents. At least I hope we're not. Just like my daughter wasn't shaming me by telling me her experiences with food and how her voice in her head sounds like me and all of that. So we're not shaming our boomer parents, but they naturally feel shame. And I believe that shame is a sick, hard, awful feeling to feel. I hate the way shame feels in my body. It feels like a hot, prickly cloak with a little bit of nausea. Like, it's such a bad feeling. But because our boomer parents aren't able to feel their shame, they avoid it by deflecting or gaslighting or denying or becoming passive aggressive or defensive or whatever else. And I just don't want that experience for my kids. As my kids are adults, I 100% expect that there will be more times when my kids will come to me and be like, here's this thing I'm struggling with. And I will recognize, oh, I did that. Like, I put that on you. I programmed you in that way. That was my own trauma response that I was placing on you. And now you think it's yours, but it's not. you know, I want that experience to be different for my kids. And I don't want my kids to feel like they can't talk to me about things and that they have problems in their lives or adaptive survival patterns that they're navigating that are keeping them stuck. When my taking responsibility for that and being able to have compassionate, honest, vulnerable communication with my kids is actually the most supportive thing for them. And I think a lot of us as millennials, like, we wouldn't have had to spend the thousands of dollars on therapy and coaching that we've had to spend if our parents were just willing to be like, you know what? Yeah, I fucked up and I can see how I fucked up and I can see how this caused this in you. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't know any better. And I'm here to support you however you need as you get better. Like, that's really all we're wanting from our boomer parents, right? That's really what we're wanting. And they're not giving that to us because they're not feeling their shame without fear. They don't want to feel shame. And so they mount all kinds of defensive mechanisms or even shut down so that they can avoid feeling shame. Whereas if we as millennials can feel our shame without fear when it comes to some of the things our kids are going through now, then we can take responsibility for ourselves and take accountability and apologize to our kids and co-regulate with our kids. And it really just fosters more intimacy and authenticity in our relationships, which is what a lot of us millennials don't have with our boomer parents. So this is a way that Feel Without Fear, my group program, is playing out in my life in real time. Anytime I launch this program, I always end up going through something that requires me to take my own medicine. And so this time it was going through something with my child that requires me to take my own medicine of awareness, of responsibility, accountability, vulnerability, and authenticity. And so I want to invite you to join Feel Without Fear. If you're looking to have more openness in your relationships and in yourself, more vulnerability, authenticity, trust, healthier communication, boundaries, awareness of your triggers, being able to notice what you feel in your body and tune into those messages that your body is sending you, you know, whether someone's holding space for you or not, if you want to develop that muscle, it really is a skill. We cover all of that. And so the doors are open to Feel Without Fear right now. You can go to lindsaylockett.com/feel. I'll have that linked in the show notes to learn all about the program. For the first time ever, we have implemented a sliding scale. So we're trying to make this program as accessible and affordable for as many people as possible. So you can check out the sliding scale. You can read what all of Feel Without Fear is about. The community that we're creating inside Feel Without Fear is incredible and intimate and wonderful. And I just love it so, so much. Feel Without Fear is truly, to this point in my life, it is my magnum opus. And I have had to live it and embody it for a couple of years before I could even teach it. And I still have to live it and embody it because stuff comes up all the time. So link is below, lindsaylockett.com/feel. There is a sliding scale. There is a payment plan. We start in April and I can't wait to see you inside Feel Without Fear. So definitely make sure you check it out. I'll talk to you next time. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end of this episode. Stay in touch with me by joining my email list at lindsaylockett.com/email. And feel free to follow along on Instagram at @IAmLindsayLockett. Finally, you can check out all of my offerings, including courses, private coaching, and workshops on my website at lindsaylockett.com.